And it is now my great pleasure to introduce you to someone who's been, who's become in the last almost year and a half a fast friend. I get to see her many times at noon most weekdays, and it's my great pleasure to introduce you to Kathy L. Manford.
I'm Kathy, and I am an alcoholic. And wow, thank you, Bill, for asking me a month ago. You know, I look at this room and I are okay, it is a room, right? We're all in a room together. And I just see all these years of sobriety. And I'm like, wow. what do you want to hear from me? You've all been a big part of my recovery. So I was thinking about that as you were reading. That I am so blessed that my higher power put all of you in my life. And I can sincerely mean that from my heart. Gosh, you know, I don't want to go on too much because most of you already know my drunkalogue, so I'll just kind of shut maybe a few of you. Well, I am a child of an alcoholic family, extremely dysfunctional. So that's not much different than a lot of us. I'm the youngest of a brother and two sisters. And I was raised in North Hollywood, California, in Hollywood, until I was 16. I have really dysfunctional family, and I went to school and I had a learning disability, so neither place was really safe for me. I felt frightened and scared from my first memory. That's all I knew was fear. And so my escape was really outside. I got outside and played and escaped from everything. That was my escape. It wasn't at school and it wasn't at home. And until I was about 14, I guess, was the first time I got drunk. And it was on beer, and I didn't really like beer much, but, man, did I do it. I did it in. I drank, got drunk, blacked out, woke up, almost got raped, and fell down, cut up my chin, and got kicked out of Lake Havasu, California from my friend's parents' house. That was at 14. So I remember thinking around the campfire, wow, this is heaven. This is really a good place to be. I love getting high. And that was the first thing I remember. And the last thing I remember was waking up with a lot of problems. So, you know, for most normal kids, I would say that 14, at 14 and having that experience wouldn't go back to drinking. You know, they go, that was really a bad experience. I don't want to do that again. Of course, that was just the beginning of my story. And so to make it from 15 through 16, 17 and 18, I did everything there was to do, you name it. And I drank right along with all of those things. So alcohol was really the name number one for me. Let me take a breath here. Because my mind goes blank, and I think I'm okay. You know, I really think that I wasn't nervous until I had some technical issues starting out tonight. And then it was like, oh, crap. Not going to go well. When I was 16, my brother, who was 4 years older than me, had an accident. And he broke his neck. And he was in the hospital about a week. But let me backtrack just for a minute. Before this happened, I was around, when I was 15, I was extremely depressed. I tried to take my life. My mother put me in counseling because I was kind of really out of control from 14 on, like I said. And I really wasn't going to school. There was no purpose for me to go to school. At least that's what I thought. And so then my brother had an accident, and so I'm not in a good place anyway, and he died from the broken neck. And my father being the alcoholic, and then when my brother died, I lost my mother emotionally, and she started drinking. So I had both my parents and I was totally out of control. I had nobody to stop me from doing whatever I wanted to, and I did. Depressed from the day I can remember, from 15 on, depressed. So they moved us, they moved me, to Lake Tahoe, and I did pretty good there. I actually went back to school. The high school told my parents to take me out of high school when I was in North Hollywood High. They said, just take her out for a while. That's how bad it was. So when I moved back to Lake Tahoe, they put me in school, and I was doing really well. And that's where I met my husband. And we got married when I was 18. We did some traveling before then. And I was just into drinking and drugging until I got pregnant. And I was I was 21. I was 20 when my dad died. And then when I was 21, when I had my first daughter. And when I got pregnant, my whole world changed. For a while, I decided that I needed to be a mother and straighten up. And so I did. I quit drugs. I quit drinking. And I got into real control. My husband was the alcoholic, and so I controlled everything he did. You know, he was the problem. I ran the household, the business, everything. You name it, I did it. I was so out of control with my not drinking and controlling the world, you know, that I, I was introduced to Al-Anon by a neighbor. And I went to Al-Anon for about 4 years, and it gave me some insight and to the fact that I thought it taught me some tools that I thought I could manipulate my alcoholic husband. I still didn't get it, but I did get some tools. I did get some messages that seeped in later in my life. I ended up going into Alcoholics Anonymous from Al-Anon because I heard these stories. They recommend that you go to AA. So I did, and I started hearing these stories, and I thought, well, I've done that. I've done this. And so when I had children, I still drank, but it was only periodically, you know. And when I drank, I did drink too much. I'd go to the bars, and I'd black out, and I'd do all that, but it just wasn't very often. So when I got into some AA meetings, I went, wow, that sounds like me. And before I knew it, I was saying, my name's Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic, you know. I was about 30, and I stayed sober for a year, maybe a little over a year in the program. And I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. But the problem was two things. I shouldn't say I worked the steps. I was introduced to the steps. There's a difference about working them and introducing them. I mean, introducing them and working them. So, as you probably all know. But I did some really crazy things. What I did was I had an affair with somebody in AA, and then my sponsor's husband tried to hit on me, and then she got drunk, and on top of all that, I didn't believe I was the alcoholic, see. I still was trying to manipulate. I really didn't think I had a problem. So I went out, and anybody here that already knows that, I can tell you, I spent the next 35 years out there, and it gets worse. So from there, a few years after that, several years after that, we ended up moving to Tahoe again. We moved away. I skipped all that. We moved back. And I had a panic attack, terrible panic attack, because I was so busy trying to run the world. And we moved to Tahoe, and my husband and I got a divorce, and that's when my alcoholism took off. Actually, it was the year before we got a divorce that started really showing its colors. I was going to the Lana Club and drinking in the middle of the day and black. And about my son, who's got the front end of, I'm sorry to say, the front end of my drinking. And I forgot to put my timer on. Because I don't want to take up too much time. So that went on for the next, until I got sober. And I got involved with a man that drank like I did. and it was wonderful. We love brandy, man. I remember hiding it and putting it in drawers when I was drunk, right? So he wouldn't drink my brandy. And then cannot remembering the next day where I put it. And I swear he drank it all. And I blame him. I said, you drank all my brandy. So I did all the crazy things, you know, that we do when we're drinking. And emotionally, it started taking me down. But I always was able to hold on to a job. I could hold on to a job and show up physically. And then I ended up in Solvang, California, living with my sister. And she was a diabetic, so I was helping her drink. Her and I drank together every night. You know, I thought I was helping her because she was diabetic, right? Because when she'd have her blackout, you know, she would, her sugar would drop. I'd be there so I could call the 911 or give her orange juice or whatever it is to survive her. But, you know, I was right there with the buying the wine and the liquor. You know, I didn't know that that was killing her. And myself. So after about 5 years of living with my sister, a lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, a lot of drinking, a lot of spending money on alcohol, the last time she fell down and went into the hospital, they asked her, they came to me and they said, do your sister have a drinking problem? And they said, oh, yeah, she's got a real bad drinking problem. Don't look at me, because it's not me. I'm not passing out in the middle of falling down, breaking my ribs and, you know, breaking my fingers. And anyway, so she was in the hospital for a while with 6 broken ribs and a broken finger. And when she got back, when she got home finally, I was still drinking. And she said, I'm going to go to AA. And it was a Sunday. No, actually, it was a Saturday when she said it. She said, I'm going to AA. And I thought, oh, crap. She's going to AA. That means I have to go. Because, you know, if I don't go, I don't have a place to live. Because this is her place. And I can't drink when she's going to AA because I'm supposed to be taking care of her. So come Sunday, man, she says, well, I'm going. Are you going with me? And I said, yeah, I'm going with you. I didn't want to go. And so we went, and then there was no meeting. It was like, you know, we looked online. It was supposed to be Sunday night, and there was no meeting. So, we made it through that day because we're going to go the next day. So that got me through one day without drinking. And I continued to go to AA. And because somewhere in my heart, I knew that it was the only way I was going to stay sober. And I remember there's a lady here tonight that about 30 days into my sobriety, she would come into meetings and she all had this big smile on her face and she was so happy and I couldn't understand where she got it from, but I wanted what she had. I wanted that. I wanted that happiness and I didn't have it because I had had depression for a long, long time. I missed over a whole bunch of my story, but I'll tell you, I tried to take my life more than once. So when I got sober this time, I suffered terrible depression in sobriety. And I just kept going to meetings. And I was willing. I was willing after about 2 weeks. I went. I remember, you've heard me say this before, but it's so important. I remember sitting in a meeting. And I picked up a cup of coffee, and I went like this, and I reached it, and I drank it. And I wasn't doing this anymore. And I went, oh, my God. That was drinking, you know? Slowly did I come to. I slowly came to. You know, I look back now and see that my liver was damaged. You know, my brain was one big fog. Denial was big. And even though I said, yeah, I knew I was an alcoholic, I didn't know my life was unmanageable. You know, And I had a sponsor help me work. I've had two sponsors help me work through that one. The unmanageability part. You know, well, this is unmanageable when you can't hold a glass. And I had to stop being a server because I couldn't serve drinks without spilling the drinks all over the tray. That's pretty unmanageable right there, you know, and that's due to drinking. That's just one simple way of saying. And then it's, you know, turning my life and my will over to care of God as I understood him. It was something greater than me. That I've always known. You know, it's like my heart. It pumps, and I don't make it pump. It works. And I don't make it do that. So there's something making it do it. There's life outside of me that's greater than me. Okay, you can have it. You know? And step four. Sat me down and said, start making a list of all your resentments. I said, I don't have any resentment. I love everybody. Oh, God. I can't believe that's what you call denial, man, not knowing thyself. And well, we'll start out with one. It's okay, Kat. Just, you know, write one down. Do you have a resentment towards your sister, maybe? Oh, yeah, I can't stand the bitch. Well, okay, let's start with that, you know? And then go through your whole, you know, your whole life and all your resentments. Oh, all them. Oh, okay. Back in all my life. Wow. There's all them. Pretty soon, I got a list. So, you know, I had a feeling, I should say, I woke up the other day. It was kind of a spiritual experience I had. And I was thinking about being in a dark room. This is how it was when I first got sober. This dark room, I shut a door on a long time ago, and all my garbage was in there, you know? And so when I got to step three, four, I opened that door, and I sat down in that room, and I was willing to start looking at some of the books and dusting off some of the stuff. And then as I did that, it got easier, and I opened the curtain a little bit. And then I invited somebody else in to come in with me and see all my garbage. You know, that's step five. And step six was the process of step five, helping me see my defects, you know. In that room, I was able to accept them with a person, another person, and organize that room. And so, you know, as it goes right down the line, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all of them are now that room is my sacred spot. That's where I meditate. It's where I can share other stuff with other people, share the message. I don't know if I'm really good at saying that as well as I did see it in my brain here, but, you know, I think you've all heard this one before. Warren, I want to share this. God is, nothing helped in this coincidence, no coincidences in this world. There aren't any. It's God's way of staying anonymous when things happen. I've met you all and no coincidences in meeting you and the lessons you've taught me. You know, it's all part of my sobriety. And you being here is an example of the love that this program gives you. And I've had two women in my life that sponsored me in this program. I mean, it's taught me to love myself. And through their love, I'm able to love myself and forgive myself and move on and get better each day. And I don't know how long I've talked, but I think that's good enough. It's a lot for me.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy. We really appreciate you. And let's see. We're now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many different people as possible. So Just please time your participation with that consideration. And I'm now going to turn the meeting back over to Kathy, who will pick on people to share.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to start out with Blanca, since she's our Lady of the Valley. She's the lady that saw me when I first got over. And, you know, I didn't pick a topic. Do I need to pick a topic? No. Or just let everybody just share whatever's on your heart. Pick your own topic.
Mm-hmm. Wow, wow, wow. Blanca alcoholic from the San Diego Valley. Hang on.
She's probably going to let her dog out.
Thank goodness for mute, because the pups just like went, okay, we hear somebody here. Oh, my gosh. But anyway, so Blanca alcoholic from the Valley, and I cannot just say how proud I am of this amazing soul sister. And I'm just so thankful for the invite to be here, to share. It just doesn't matter where we are from, wherever in any parts. I love the Zooms because we can connect with people from all over, and here we are, you know. And so it just feels so amazing. It's like everything that you were saying, Kathy, you know, from identifying and all that, and just to see your growth is so inspiring. To see another woman, whether, I mean, you gave more to me than I did to you, because we grow. It's like, you know, you are here amongst all these people that love and support you. And I'm just like, oh, dang, sister, you landed beautifully. Like we all do. We all, as long as, for me, it's like, as long as I'm doing my deal, I can get through it. Because in sobriety, we all know life happens. It just doesn't, you know, oh, here we are overnight. And we're all like, you know, we're all cleaned up, you know, maybe, you know. It takes some work, but to see you thriving and to see you alive, and that's the greatest gift that we have here, being alive, being grateful, and being in gratitude and appreciation of the gift of sobriety, the gift that you all have given me, because for me, I was prayed in, you know, that silly little prayer and keep coming back, you know, and it's like that years of people praying in the rooms for me to come in, and now I get to pray for the people that suffer in and out of our rooms, because we never know, and that spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous is so powerful that brings us together, people from all walks of life that we would never have ever hung out. Look at us enjoying this brief moment of just celebrating each other, celebrating everybody's sobriety here. And with that, I'm just so grateful. I got to spend a moment with my soul sister and meeting all of you. So thank you for welcoming me to your meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Blanca. You want to call on somebody? That way you can just play tag. Is that all right?
Oh, got it. Call on somebody. All right, Jen, I'd like to say hi.
Hey, everybody. Jen, alcoholic. Kathy, thanks for your share. It takes a lot of courage to share your story, especially on Zoom. It's kind of, I don't know, I did it once and I was hella nervous, but you did a great job. I totally identify with what you said about step four. Like, I don't have any resentments. Like, I love everybody. You know, some people I don't care for, but, you know, I don't resent them. Yeah, right. But it just takes that one. You start with one, and then it's like, okay, then that person, and that person, and that, you know, so it kind of, yeah, it, step four definitely opened my eyes to a lot of things. You know, all the, the character defects and the fears, and fear drives me to, you know, drives my behavior, my bad behavior. And it's not like the other person's fault completely. I gotta look at like what my part was in the whole situation, you know, because I used to like to point fingers at people and say it was all their fault. And, you know, I drank at people, hoping they would die. You know, it's crazy. But that's just the way my brain worked. But, you know, once I looked at, you know, finished step 4 or 5 and, you know, let somebody see all my stuff, which was totally terrifying. I wanted to hold back some things and not tell the whole story and keep things to myself. But, you know, they say secrets make you sick. So, you know, I got the courage to share everything. And I'm glad I did. 'Cause doing step 5 definitely took a weight off my shoulders. And, you know, step 6, 7, you know, made me realize like what my character defects were and to work on them and to, you know, ask God to remove them. You know, I couldn't leave it all up to him though. You know, I couldn't just say, hey God, take this away from me and not do any of the work, right? Yeah. I'm super glad to be here. I told you I put it in my calendar because I would forget, and sure enough, my calendar popped up, and I was like, oh, crap. So, I'm so glad to be here, and I miss seeing you at the meter, and I miss your dog. Your dog is so darn cute. Thanks for, aww. but thank you for sharing your story with us and having the courage to do that. And I'll keep coming back. Thanks, Kathy.
Jen, you want to call on somebody? We're going to play tag.
Oh, yeah, that's right, tag. Jamie.
Thanks, Jen. I'm used to using the phone instead of the computer, and so I'm not sure if you guys hear me. Just put your thumbs up if you hear me okay, because I don't know how good the microphone is, and I think it's good. Anyway, Kathy, I guess what I wanted to share with you, and thank you so much for speaking, and I concur with what everybody else said, is that it's just, you did an awesome job. You've just got such a, you've got a gift for communication, and I'm glad you've been using it on the stage. Unfortunately, because of my schedule, I didn't get to see you last time. Hopefully the next time when the Hanford players or whatever get together, that we'll be all there and seeing you. So so we, you know, we have that in common, I guess, too. You know what, when I moved up here in 2000, from San Diego, I moved to Hanford in 2019, I think it was. So that was about the same time. I think, Kathy, you were a little bit after that. But about the same time. And, you know, my whole life, I've always lived with people. I've always had someone to kind of take care of me, my parents, and then significant others or roommates. I always had other people. I never lived by myself. And I've been sober for a little bit, and I found myself living in a studio apartment in Hanford, which is a strange town to me when coming from San Diego. And, you know, it's just, I mean, those of you who've moved here can relate, and some of you have been here a long, long time or grew up here. I think you see it as well. It's just, it's a different place, and it's an incredible place. But at the time, I didn't think so. I just the heat alone was like, man, my God, it's hell. But you know what? They told me I would acclimate. And you know what? I did. I did acclimate. And that's the point. That's a message that I'm getting from you is, you talked about, you know, you moved here and you had your roommate for a little bit and then you moved on into your own place. And, I know that was a challenge. I'm sure it had because it was for me a definite challenge to be alone. But guess what? That's when spiritual stuff can really gel. That's when you can just talk out loud to God all day long and all night long and just connect. And I've got a sneaking suspicion that you did and do. And of course to Mia as well. I mean, Mia, right? I should go bring my her little friend over as well, but, That was a really, really spiritual time, and it was a crucible, basically, and it was great. And I know that I think you experienced the same thing. And so I just want to know when we're going to see you again live. It's been some time. So anyway, thank you so much. Also, it was great seeing Blanca here, too, you know, coming all the way, making that long trip all the way over from the valley, too. To Hanford and or wherever we're at right now. But no, we're in Visalia, that's right. So anyway, thanks very much, Kathy. Love you, love your message, and loved hearing you speak as always. Thank you. I'm calling Chris.
Thanks, Jamie. Hi, I'm Chris. I'm alcoholic. God, that was just so awesome, Kathy. Oh my God. I just could relate to so much that you shared. I mean, fear from like day one, you know, not feeling comfortable on who I was in my own family. You know what I mean? I could so relate to that. And what I really love that you shared, I mean, there were so many things, but I love that I also got the gift of being physically sober, but not a program, because that was just as freaking painful as anything else. You know, that control, like it's a control, controlling the world. And to me, that was a wonderful gift that God gave me, because now I know that I need more than just physical sobriety. I want a program that works, you know what I mean? And I loved how you shared about the room with all your stuff and that garbage in there. What a visual. I'm such a visual person, you know? My sponsor tells me, okay, it's the puzzle. When you're trying to shove that puzzle piece in, that's your will, Chris. That's your will. I need those visuals, you know, and those are wonderful things, because that's the stuff I pass on to the women that I work with today. You know what I mean? Because I don't have to make new shit up. I'm just passing on whatever somebody else told me. You know what I mean? I used to make shit up when I was drinking and using all the time, because you know, I had a bad ego and stuff. Today, I don't have to know anything. All I have to do is just kind of, the seed is planted. And I don't know what it is, but I believe because of the spiritual life that I practice, right, that those things will come to me when I need them and when they're supposed to be there, because they germinate. As long as I stay sober, first of all, and then I work this program, and I cultivate that relationship with the God of my understanding, you know. I didn't get that the first time I was in here. I just checked the boxes, did the steps. I didn't know that I had to make a friend of that God of my understanding, and today I know so much different. And so my spiritual life is just, that is the foundation. That is the foundation, and that's what helps me be able to do all these steps. I love when we, you know, we come in these rooms and we talk about, here was my problem, but you know what? Here was my solution. This is what I learned. This is how I found this, you know. And I love, I could see, you know, I've known you for a minute and I could see all your growth. You know what I mean? And just, I mean, in that willingness, you know, that willingness that we have. And, you know, today I got to work with two women and just to see them blossoming. And, you know, there's one who's less than 60 days, and I already see that honesty starting to come. You know, that willingness, you know, because we, as sponsors, we make safe places. You know, that's what my sponsor did. The sponsor I found this time, I wanted somebody to help me learn who the hell I was. I needed to be able to be honest. You know, I wanted so desperately. I think the first time I came in, I was too, but then I got like, yeah, okay, now I got it. You know, and this time I know enough that I ain't got it. It's not about me, you know what I mean? And so I get to learn a little bit about myself. And like you said, I get to love myself today. You know, it took me all of these steps to clean out all this stuff, to get that light, that connection to that spirit of the light that got me to learn that I'm okay with who I am. Because you know what? I know that God always loves me. you know, and I got to learn that what other people think of me isn't my business. And that was big because I was that people pleaser and that caregiver and all those things. And I learned how to navigate that. Not so pretty at first, very fearful, uncomfortable. And when I'm uncomfortable, I'm probably doing some growth. And I just love that. You know, I texted Kathy before. I said, oh, it's an hour and a half meeting. I'm exhausted. I'm not tired at all. I came in here, I listened to Kathy, and I'm ready to go. That's what this program gives me. It gives me joy. It gives me energy. It just... It sparks me, you know, and I just love that. I feel like we're in our own little private room, and there's all these people who I love. I don't even know you, Blanca, but I love you already. You know what I mean? It's just because we have this connection. You know, there's just this wonderful spirit that just flows. You know, I mean, I'm not even near you, and I can feel your energy because I can see it coming through your faces, and I just love that. So I love you, Kathy, and Rennie would like to say hello to Mia, but he is sleeping on the couch on this little kitty cat that just thinks Mia is the other cat. So she'll need to come over and visit and say hi. But I just love you, honey. Thank you for reminding me. And I didn't even need a reminder because I had a little alarm that said Kathy's coming on today. So I love that. Thank you so much. And I think I'm going to call him as Diana.
Thanks, Chris. Hi, everybody. I'm Diana, and I'm an alcoholic. And first of all, Kathy, awesome job. And Blanca, it's wonderful to finally meet you. Thank you for passing the torch. We have a very special woman in common. And Kathy, thank you for letting me be a part of your spiritual journey. You know, my relationship with Kathy over the last year has been spirited. It has, we've had our ups and downs, and one of the things that she's taught me is to how to communicate truthfully, because she's been always very, very truthful, and she's giving me permission to be truthful back. And we've cried together. We've laughed together. Every time we get in the car, we always don't get to exactly where we're going at the right time, but we always get there. So that's more laughter. And I need to see Maya. I need to see her on the screen because she makes my heart very happy. There she is. There's our girl. You know, one of the things that I really wanted to touch on was how you talked about the steps. And I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and the gentleman said on the podcast that a lot of people come into recovery, and they come in and they think that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is the key and it's enough. And what he said is something that I believe. The fellowship is nice, but it's the steps that change us. It's working the steps that get us to be the people that we were intended to be. And without the steps, with just the fellowship is good. It's good feeling sometimes, not so good. But it's that the steps and the way that you describe them is what I see in you and what I see from when I first met you to who you are today. And it's because you've worked the steps so honestly. You've just said, what's that, how an Alcoholics Anonymous, honest, open, and willing. And that's what I've seen. And I think Chris hit it on the nail on the head, is that we get so much out of the women that we sponsor. And you know, what I really love is in my darkest day in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I work with another alcoholic in those dark days, you're the ones who sponsor me. You're the ones, if I'm working on a step with you, I get to go, oh, yeah, that's it. And then another sponsee comes up, and I go, oh, yeah, that's it. And I get to slowly climb out of that dark hallway that I sometimes get in. And I've heard a woman talk about that hallway that we get in recovery. And I don't have to lose hope. And working with you and watching you grow, I know that you're not alone, and I know that I'm not alone. And I went to this wonderful little luncheon that a couple of the women in Alcoholics Anonymous had for you, and it is to celebrate you. And you know, you and I both come to Hanford and this valley from different places, and our meetings were so much different than they were here. The people were so much different than they were here. And before when I knew I was moving, it was like every meeting I would go to, a woman would say, about having to move and how to do it in God's way, and that is to be one among many and not just ever say, well, we don't do it like that in my old meeting. And, you know, and I was so glad that I had that little bird in my ear talking to me like that, because none of the meetings I've been to here have been like my meetings in the Bay Area. But man, have I fallen in love with the women here and how I've grown here. And I thought I wouldn't. And I was just so willing to go to any length to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what. And so when I went to this, and knowing that your transplant also, and then, and at your third year sober birthday, women had a little birthday luncheon for you, and what a great celebration. And you know, I see faces here. They were at that your birthday luncheon, and I celebrate Jen and Sandy and Chris and you. And, you know, we're, as women, we usually feel we don't belong and we're not a part of. And we just kind of feel like we're on the outside. And when I walked into the house, I knew that I belonged, and I knew that I belonged with you and with the women who were hosting this, because we're all one and we have one common goal, and that's to stay sober. Not only stay sober, but to spread the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and love and fellowship and to be a part of, not to be apart from. That's one of the things that I get in the meetings that I go to today, is that I am a part of. Even though I might not feel it, I am a part of, because I've earned my seat and I claim that seat. So, and I know you do too. So thank you for just showing such a, and giving us such a wonderful message about how it works in Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you, Kathy, and I love you. Oh, who am I going to call on, Sandy? Me.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sandy, and I am an alcoholic, and I am so blessed to be here tonight. Kathy, what a woman you are. And Blanca, I felt like I already knew you before I got here, and I feel like our whole little family is all here tonight, but I just can't help but thinking about the first day that I met you, Kathy, in the rooms here in Hanford. And I always go back to that day, because I was really in a dark place. You know, I had just recently relocated back here. And I was in a meeting, and I think I was just sobbing that day. And you came up to me and offered me your phone number. And talk about, there are no coincidences, that it's all about God here. We met for coffee maybe a week later and found out that we had all lived in all these different places along Lake Tahoe, Monterey, and it's like, wow, that was amazing. But anyway, your story, your life, our pain, our, you know, it's just like such an unbelievable place to be, Alcoholics Anonymous. There are many days when I think my life would just suck without these 12 steps. Even if I wasn't an alcoholic, I think I learned how to live here. I learned how to be honest here. I learned to put my big girl panties on here. You know, it's like everything. And when I walked into these rooms, I was still a teenager. You know, I was still in that place where I started my alcoholism. And I was petrified here. I mean, I had all these things that I was never going to talk. I was not going to do this. I was not going to do that. And you know what? I've done it all. You know, it's such a beautiful, beautiful program. And with this Zoom too, it's like, it doesn't even matter where we're at. You know, we're all in the same room and miles away, you know, and thanks, Blanca, for driving all this way. But, I've just seen you blossom. I've just seen like this little seed be planted, and you just grow and grow and grow, and it's just, and to be able to celebrate your birthday, and it's just such, you know, I'm in awe of everything. You know, that certain times I'm like, you know, you have these days of like, okay, you know, how many times, how many, you know, steps am I going to work, or how many times am I going to work the steps? And then it's like, you know, then you go to a meeting and you hear somebody say something like, I absolutely love your room. You know what I mean? It's like just sitting in the middle of that sandbox, kind of thinking, where do I start? Where do I begin? And the truth, you know, it's like to share with God, you know, your truth with God and another human being. Well, you know, it's like with God, we have like that relationship. But to actually say out loud to another person our truths, our, all those secrets that we've been holding for years and years and years, it's like, it's just like all this poison coming out of your body. And it's like, you're just getting healed. And it was, your share was just so amazing, Kathy. And I just want you to know that I love you so much. I'm so glad I met you. It's not a coincidence. And, you know, I just think that, we just continue to grow and grow and grow and working with other women and being friends in this fellowship. It's like we get, whether you're my sponsor or her sponsor or anybody's sponsor, we get little bits and pieces every time we get together of each other's stories. What a beautiful thing that is. And then to come here and just have it all be one. Thank you, Kathy. I love you. Well, I think you're next, Bill. Bill.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one left because Mike.
You're always last.
No, I'm first and last, right? I get to start this off. That works out really nicely. Hey, Kathy, thank you so much for being here. You know, one of the things that affects me so much about this little family we have here is how we have, you know, we come from different places. I mean, you know, Jamie and I and Mike here are clearly in the minority in terms of gender today, but I would suggest that there's probably a really good chance that notwithstanding those differences, there's a great deal of connection that we make through identification. And one of the things that I've really identified with you recently is the relationship with your daughter. You've talked about the dynamics of that relationship have changed. And that your daughter is celebrating that she has a mother in her life, and how much that means to you. And you know, most of you I get to see several times a week, and I'm so grateful for that. And so many of you know the story about my dad and I, and it continues to have new chapters, which I suppose I'm really should be grateful for. I was, just as a kind of a recap, I was really angry with my father when this whole journey started. And I had some really patient, wise people giving me some suggestions on how I might find my own peace in a world that included my dad, if I would be willing to consider some different idea and take some different actions. And as a result, like I said, many of you have heard the stories. I mean, it's a wholesale miracle that this happened in the relationship with my father. And about a year ago, yeah, it'll be a year ago in September. My dad was one of the people, again, many of you know this, but he lost his house in the fire that took place nearby here. You know, 17 years ago, my dad would not have been welcome in my house. And he came and he stayed with us. He moved in with us, basically. And he stayed for a while, and then he was able to get a place of his own, and then in some transition stage, he kind of came back to staying with us for a while, and then eventually has gone back up to the hill, and he's rebuilding his house. And the latest chapter of this is that my dad, in those years, he's had a couple of strokes, and he has difficulty speaking and writing and reading. His health otherwise seems to be fine, but his linguistic skills are seriously impaired. And so he's trying to build his house, and he has to communicate with the people that are doing that work for him. And so last weekend when he showed up, I asked him how that was going, because he and I both communicate with his insurance agent to, you know, manage the claim. And I knew we needed to be back in touch with her pretty soon. And so I asked him what was going on, and he kind of shrugged his shoulders and threw up his hands and said, well, nobody's talked to him. And I instantly, well, okay, so I've had some time to process this, okay? So I'm going to tell you what I didn't know a week ago that I know today, right? I'm going to just skip ahead a little bit, and I'm going to tell you that out of fear, I reacted. Mm-hmm. I got angry with my dad. I got critical of my father, and you know, I don't know if this happens to you guys. I suspect it probably does, but when I'm in that place, when I'm in that fear, I don't see it as fear. I see it as rational, justified behavior. my behavior, that is, that's rational and justified. And I can't see, instinctively, I can't see the truth. I can't see the source of my behavior. I can't see why it is I'm upset. I just know I'm upset. And that's one of the great keys. That's a really good hint for me. When I'm upset and I can't communicate in a clear, reasonable fashion why I'm upset, that is a great tip that there's something else going on. And that's, I found myself just kind of spinning, you know, in that frustration. And so I want to share with you guys, if I could, real quick, what I got to learn in this last week, right? So I did a resentment inventory, as I've been taught to do, and I was angry at my father because he's avoiding responsibilities. He's a burden on me. He's paranoid. He's delusional. He's stubborn, and he's stupid. Those are all the things I'm pissed off at my dad about. It. And through the process of going through the inventory, I found out that I'm afraid that I can't save him, that I'm powerless over his condition, that I'll fail in being the kind of support that he needs, that he'll embarrass me, or that I'll become ashamed of him. I'm afraid I'm going to be burdened, that I'll fail, or I'll be denied my own happiness, and that I won't get something that I want. Those are all the fears that are wrapped up in how I perceive my dad's behavior. And I also find out, ultimately that I'm afraid that I might have to be responsible. I might have to actually be an adult, you know? And I'm afraid my dad's getting old and he's fading. I'm going to lose him. I did all this work to get a relationship with a dad, you know, and now I'm going to lose it. Or it feels like it's slipping through my fingers. And the problem with all this is, you know, again, my fear is that, I mean, there's a number of fears there, right, that I told you about. But one of the fears is that I'm going to lose my dad. And so what do I do with that fear? I belittle him. I disrespect him. I criticize him for his disabilities. I lose valuable time that I have left with him. I lose valuable time to demonstrate the changes that you guys have put in my life. I resort back to just instinctive. We like to call them old, but, you know, if you're still doing them, they're not old, right? Behaviors. And I'm just so grateful that that I've been given, you know, some tools that allow me to get to the truth of my own situation. And what I've been taught to do with this new awareness is to implement some changes. We call those amends, right? And part of that is to have a frank conversation with my dad about how I've been behaving and how I don't want to continue to behave that way. But a much, much more important, a much bigger piece of that is, me learning how, to change. And, the good news is, and Kathy, you've demonstrated this to me in several ways in the last couple of weeks, is that it's absolutely possible. Absolutely possible. So thanks for letting me share, and thanks for influencing my life the way you do. I think I'm the last person that hasn't shared, that has a microphone. We do have a few minutes, Kathy. If there's anything that maybe came to mind that you'd like to elaborate on, you can use the time, or we can close early. It's up to you.
Oh, gosh. You know, I just want to thank you all for being who you are and everything you said. See, that's how we stay sober. Isn't it crazy? A bunch of us drunks can get together, not drinking, and learn how to live this life. You know? We listen to each other's stories and it helps us stay sober. Isn't that crazy? And we find love through it. And I just love you all, and I feel so blessed. Thank you again for what you said, for being here, and Phil. In every connection, there, in every way, we find a connection with each other, even though our life may be miles apart when we were drinking, you know? But we come together and we're just like, wow, you know, we're so much alike. We see the similarities instead of the differences. That's what I wanted to say. When I came into the program, I had to learn to see the similarities instead of the differences, because when I first went into AA, I did, all I saw was the differences, and it took me right out the door. So, and today I can just love and thank you. Mike doesn't have a microphone, huh? Okay.
All right. Well, thank you again, Kathy. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship. If you're interested in being of service with this group, please reach out to me after the meeting. If anyone is in need of sponsorship or is available to sponsor, please send me a direct message via the chat with your name and phone number, and I'll be sure to pass that information to our sponsorship coordinator. Are there any announcements from the audience tonight?
I am Chris, I'm an alcoholic. I think you have all these, but there is, I think it's August 28th, there's a social with a speaker that's going to be up in Fresno, and I know we have a flyer.